Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have an entertaining show for you, something educational and something interesting at the same time, especially those of us that are in the field and practicing clinically daily. We have our official guest, Dr. Jim Kyle. How you doing today, Dr. Jim?
Very good. I'm all the way here in southern West Virginia, where it's a bit chilly today on November the 15th, the Ides of November.
We're pretty cold out here in California. We're at what? 58 to 60, so I get that.
I'm not a bit sorry for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And our co-host today, a guest in the past and first time co-hosting, Miss Ashley Sink. How are you doing today, Ash?
I'm doing well today. How are you doing, Eli?
I'm doing great. Thanks for doing this today, you guys. We really appreciate it. We think this is an important topic to talk about in healthcare, whether you are a high school student, a college student, a professional athlete, whatever it is, playing sport, medical timeout. We've seen it in action in the NFL, on TV a couple times. We've seen it NBA, MLB, you name it, NHL, MLS, anything on TV. Ashley and myself actually have to use it, knock on wood, every now and then on a Friday night, a Thursday night, a Wednesday night. But the creator of the actual term medical timeout and the thought process behind it is our guest today, Dr. Jim Kyle. And with that, Dr. Kyle, love to hear a little bit about your background as a physician and what got you into the sports medicine field before we get right into medical timeout.
Well, thank you. Most of my work has been in West Virginia, some in the northern Florida area where we lived for about 10 years. But my interest in sports medicine while in medical school was probably fostered by the fact that my father was a coach and athletic director at a school here in southern West Virginia, Concord College, now Concord University, a Division II program. Dad and I attended the West Virginia High School Basketball Championships in Morgantown, home of Western University, when I was, a senior in high school. And believe it or not, that's where I saw my first sudden cardiac arrest in a sporting venue.
Holy crap, that early?
Yes, and it was not to a player. Time-wise, this is back in about 1970, 1971. It was to one of the officials. And for safety preparation, the Mountaineer basketball arena, the Coliseum, the lower seats were actually pulled up. So there was about a 10-foot drop from the fixed seats down to the playing floor, and certainly an ER doctor jumped over the edge, down on the field, down on the court, started CPR, and of course there were no automated external defibrillators in 1970, and the official died.
Oh, man.
So that was my first witness of it.
That's a hell of a time to get impacted, man, that young and seeing that happen right on the court, on the field. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
The next hiccup, if you will, occurred in the early 90s when I was traveling with U.S. soccer with their under-17 national team in the World Championships in Italy. And we were the opening game against Italy. And you could imagine the crowd.
Oh, yes.
And we were in a small town called Monte Catini, sort of over on the west coast. And I'd done my homework about emergency preparedness and found that there was really no hospital in town. A couple small emergency rooms, no CAT scan. And here I am with the best of the best young elite soccer players in the country. How do I prepare for game day and the what ifs? So we got there early, of course, for the first game and introduced myself to the ambulance staff present and, of course, the team physician for Italy and their trainer. And I suggested we go over to the ambulance and see what they had. And that didn't turn out very good, Ashley. First, they were sipping wine, which is not a problem. They
I'm
did
in.
Not,
hey, let's go to a game and drink some wine. Yeah.
They had no backboard. Their defibrillator, their pads were actually the metal pads that you probably have never seen that you use on the heart inside cardiac surgery. And they were rusted. No C collar, so on and so forth. So we won the game 1-0. Pele kicked out the ball.
Oh, wow. I'm a huge soccer buff, so that would be amazing to me.
So in the hotel that night, they had one of the old-fashioned typewriters. This is 91. So I typed up a little message to the FIFA sports medicine team, and I was scheduled the next day to play golf, actually, with their lead physician. Well, that golf game got canceled. So the medical timeout in Italy didn't go very well. Fast forward in the Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta, I had the pleasure to have my first working relationship with Mr. Ron Horson. Ron had just been appointed as the UGA head athletic trainer. And of course, a name that's known pretty well, East Coast and West Coast. And we were charged with emergency preparedness at Olympic Stadium. Pretty hot summer in 1996. A lot of heat illness worries and a lot of what ifs. So we had pretty much the whole summer to prep and to execute, and it went very well. And that's the emergency action plan thought process and AEDs at Sporting Events research project that we published in the NATA journal, I think in 2001, after a study group looked at how to be ready for the what ifs on game day, not just at big sporting venues, not just professional, not just Division I NCAA, but how do you take that to small town USA and make it work? And that's what the Friday night medical timeout, sort of the roots, if you will, and the fertilizer to make it all happen.
Now, I wouldn't say fertilizer. I've been called fertilizer in a different way in the past, but I love hearing the story of how it developed from the roots up, and what a story there. I love it. And what ifs? That's our life. I mean, Georgia and any of us in the profession know UGA, University of Georgia, their EAP system and what they came up with. When I sat down 25 years ago to create an EAP at my school as a brand new head athletic trainer, I went to their university and found their information. So you start talking about it, I'm like, I vividly remember reading through that going, this is phenomenal. So that's just too funny. My entire EAP sitting here on my left is based out of University of Georgia's information. So the information you did has helped protect my boys, and I say boys because I'm at a private all-boys Catholic school. It has helped me protect my student-athletes, faculty, staff as well, and visitors and the occasional official too, here at St. Francis for 27 years. So thank you for your work to get me there. I appreciate that. Who knew? Small world.
Yes, and we were just on the campus at the University of Georgia this summer. One of the things that Ashley and I have talked about is the new interest globally in the country about sudden cardiac arrest in athletes after the high-profile case in early January of 23 with the NFL and DeMar Hamlin. Ron and I worked together. We published a video about not just the initial response by you or Ashley and your team, the primary response team, but what happens next when EMS arrives. And that transition is involving some emerging concepts that are going to be very exciting. And Ron Corson is featured in that video if you haven't had a chance to see it.
The medical handoff.
Yeah.
The medical handoff. That's really important. Now, yeah. Ashley, you and I understand what that is, but maybe we've got an athlete, a parent, or even my sister. My sister is an education. She is an English teacher. She listens to the show because I guilt her into it. I love her. But she doesn't know what a medical handoff is. Can you explain that real quick so somebody, a layperson, could understand?
What's your sister's name?
Oh, gosh. I don't like saying it on the air, but I'll do it anyway. Angela, spelled A-N-N, because she's an angel is what my mom said. Her and angel.
What does she teach?
She teaches English at Liberty Ranch High School in Sacramento. Shout out Liberty Ranch. I'll actually see you guys in 3 days at an event in Sacramento. So looking forward to that.
Fine.
Yeah, well, Miss Angela, the most people are exposed now to the concept of CPR and the use of a AED. The heart shocker saves lives. And we know that in young people, if the collapse on a playing field or in a classroom, that early recognition that it could be a cardiac arrest, rapid chest exposure and compressions that most English teachers can do, and then applying the AED as soon as possible results in success most of the time. 70, 80% of the time it's done promptly. And schools across the country now are being challenged with putting together student cardiac arrest awareness and action plans. And I'm sure it's happening there in the LA area. The NFL Corey Stringer Institute initiative of the Heart Smart Student Coalition is alive and well. And I think California just passed legislation making that mandatory.
Yeah, I actually had to advocate at my school recently to provide additional AEDs on campus, and I'll be doing their recertification this winter, actually. So being able to be more hands-on and with administration and being able to get 3 additional AEDs on campus when we only had 2 prior that were not accessible within that 3 to 5 minutes of brisk walking to and from each classroom was kind of a big concern for me. So that's been a huge feat for myself personally. And I'm sure a lot of athletic trainers are feeling that type of backing with the recent legislation in order to be able to advocate for their faculty, staff, student population, to be able to provide more resources for them.
And so are the school nurses.
Mm-hmm. A lot of us actually don't have school nurses. Some of us are the school nurse.
No. We are the school. School medical staff. I am not a nurse. I never went to nursing school. I am the director of health services. We take care of everybody on campus. Even the occasional dog that comes in, we might take a look at, but that's more for our mental health. So for those of you that don't know what happened in California this last few months, we've had a whirlwind of legislation, as Ashley and I can attest, and dealing with AEDs. It kind of took a little sidestep. The law that was supposed to kick in kind of got bumped just a little bit. But any of us at California that are working at a high school setting must have, by CIF guidelines, and that's the California Interscholastic Federation, who oversees, I think it's about 85, 90% of the schools in California's athletics, we must have a AED. Is it within 3 minutes, Ashley?
Of every sports facility.
Yes. So anywhere within a campus having athletics, you must have an AED within 3 minutes there and back. So you can take care of that patient. At the same time, the law that's supposed to take effect was supposed to originally take effect this past summer, July 1st, 2024. However, due to financial reasons, my understanding, they bumped it to give everybody time to tighten their purse strings and get the money ready. And all schools, period, must have one within a 3 minute distance as of July 1st. Is it 2027? I believe. I think it's July 1st or January 1st. One of the two. 2027 is the year, though.
Well, I would definitely consider us lucky because we were able to apply for the AED that CIF was actually giving out to schools within the district. So we were fortunate enough to receive one, and we were able to put one into our gym, which was huge for us. That was also a definite bonus within this year.
Definite shout out to in the Southern section, to Mike West, friend and colleague, who really pushed for those grants and was able to help a lot of the high schools in the region that couldn't get an AED. I mean, they're not expensive, but they ain't cheap. Mm-mm. You're talking about, you know, between $1,200, $1,600 all in. But hey, one lawsuit from not being able to jumpstart somebody's heart is much more than that. You know, shout out to CIF for making a grant available so schools could get a few for free.
Yes.
Big, big, big deal.
And back to Angela and the question for her. So the first step when recognizing that an athlete has collapsed from a cardiac arrest is for the first rescuer to point to a person nearby. So I'm pointing to you, Eli, and say, Eli, call 911 and tell them we have a cardiac arrest. So that Eli calls, which means in the next few minutes, let's just say in the next 5 minutes, the ambulance arrives. And the medics with all their equipment are at now courtside. And what are they going to do next? Remember that AED is going to be able to give probably two shocks in the first 5 minutes, most of the time with a very happy result. The athlete wakes up, the student wakes up.
Everybody's happy. That's what we want.
But for Angela, if it doesn't work, we want medics to think, why? Why didn't it work? Everything was done in the right order. Were the pads in the proper placement? If it's an athlete, the pad placement is key, particularly if it's a sweaty chest. So what we're telling and working with Ron Corson at the University of Georgia is saying, assume that you need to change the direction of the energy for the heart chakra. Instead of front and side, go front and back and give max energy. A lot of the AEDs don't have max energy capabilities. So that's how I would explain it to Angela, that transfer, if it's not working, let's try to nail it down and get them back with the first max energy shock from a different direction.
The quicker you get them back, the better chance they have. So I'm all for max energy. That's a great point. Moving into, I just love calling MTO, medical timeout. You know, in the background of your, we're on Zoom right now. I love the Friday night medical timeout logo you got going. We were introduced to each other maybe about 6-8 weeks ago. And I got to be honest, I've done a medical timeout for years. I had no idea that's what it was called. I just did it. A good friend of mine said, well, it's not a medical timeout. It's just being cordial. It's being a good colleague, making sure that somebody coming to your venue just knows, hey, we got you covered if necessary. I know Ashley and I have talked about this a little bit. Ashley, how long have you done a medical timeout?
I've done it since I was a student athletic trainer in high school. We would always walk across the field, introduce ourselves. We'd be introduced as the student ATs. We would discuss EAP, EMS on site, and of course, which gate to enter, who would make the call, who would unlock the gate. That was just the standard since 2004.
Now, just real quick, real quick nod to the high school. What high school did you go to that was doing this?
Claremont High School.
That's Heather right, Claremont Corona. High School. And just for our listeners, remember, Ashley is no longer in high school. She is an athletic trainer at, I never got to say it, so shout out to?
Fairmont Preparatory Academy.
There we go, down in OC, taking care of a great, great school down there. Great, great kids. So she's doing a fabulous job. Medical timeout, it's a fantastic idea. Dr. Kyle, if you could go ahead and just, in a nutshell, give, again, thinking back to my sister, Angela, how would you explain medical timeout to just a normal English teacher or anybody just wondering, what the heck are we talking about?
Well, I probably would start with your emergency action plan and visit to Georgia, University of Georgia.
Let's do it.
The emergency action plan is necessary to provide safe sports play every day at Fairmont Prep Academy and there with your St. Francis, because you've got several practices going on in different venues, and a posted emergency action plan for the what ifs is essential. It's necessary. I mean, it just has to happen, and it's been legislated.
So one thing that is definitely needed, that EAP, that emergency action plan, is really set in place to take care of whoever needs us. And I love how you keep saying what ifs, because in our mind, what we do is, oh my gosh, what if, what if, what if? That is our job, to be prepared for the what if. So I love you putting it that way.
Yeah, so on game day, when you've got a visiting team and maybe, depending on the sport, an ambulance present, it's important that the EMS personnel and the visiting sports medicine staff knows all the details of that particular sporting venue emergency action plan. And going through a format, this medical time out is a checklist, a simple checklist. For example, to the English teachers out there, it's divided on a front and back page. The top portion of the medical timeout has 10 boxes for awareness, so 10 check marks. Does the EMS squad that's there have advanced cardiac life support talent? ACLS, EMS, check. Do you have a sideline AED? Check. Do all the members of the team realize that a sudden cardiac arrest might show up with sentinel seizure or seizure-like activity with eyes open and agonal respirations? Check. Do you have face mask and equipment removal tools? Check. What is your C-spine protocol if there's a possible neck injury? Check. Are you going to remove equipment on the field of play or not? Check. Do you have a lightning plan and weather issues? Check. Do you have that monitor that you talked about in previous shows, the wet ball globe temperature monitor? Check. If there is heat stroke, do you have the capability of cooling prior to transport? Check. And do you have a hemorrhage control kit, a stop the bleed kit? Check.
Now, for any of our listeners that would like to see this physically, and Ashley and I have both gone through these forms, it is so helpful as a clinician. We want you to go to www.kyle-group.com. Again, www.kyle-group.com. Go to the educational extras section and then go down to GATA 2023 MTO checklist. That checklist is there. And again, there are multiple pages. The nice thing is, if it's something you are ready to use, you can print it out right there and have at. It's fantastic how Dr. Kyle has just created this checklist. And it's really something we all did, but never thought about putting in writing, I bet. And this just makes it a little easier. They've got different formats. They've got different styles, different information. They've got a SCAT 5 on one of them to help you out on the sidelines, a procedures list. One of them that I really like, and I got to be honest, I borrowed it and tweaked it a little bit and used it at our school. And that's the little handout card. I believe we call it the Andrews Institute card, correct, sir?
Yes, that's from Dr. Jim Andrews down in Pensacola area of Florida, and his team. They said, you know, that's a little bit big. We needed just a pocket card to put down the phone numbers and everything. And it's worked pretty good.
You know what? I like it all. So we've got a little bit of everything, but we like that little pocket card, as you called it. We'll hand it to the visiting athletic trainer and say, here you go. Here's the info for the night. If you need it, here's how you contact us. Here is where our AED is. Here's where the hospital is. It's this far away. So we've actually kind of used your information from the website for our school. I hate to say it's come in handy every time we used it, knock on wood, and we got a game tonight, so that makes me nervous. Every time we hand them out, some way, shape, or form, we've had to use it. So I'm hoping at the game tonight I can break that streak. But we've been very fortunate. Mostly it's, depending on how you look at fortunate, it's been in the stands. We had a day where we were just coming out of the, what is it, the red zone in heat index, and we were playing, and it was bloody hot. It really was in September. And this gentleman came out. He was about 78, 79. Thin as a rail, probably didn't hydrate enough. Needless to say, we had to escort him to the ambulance and get him out after we got him back from dehydration. But that was the first time we actually handed the card out. And I'm like, well, that worked perfect. So thank you very much.
Well, I have to give credit to Matt McGraw, who's the in charge of athletic trainer placement in the greater Pensacola area. Athletic trainer, longtime leader at the Andrews Institute, and Dr. Sam Scarnio Miller used to be at KSI, now is in charge of the curriculum at West Virginia University. Matt and Sam collaborated to come up with that card during the pandemic. And another mention for those who were paying attention and didn't have a chance to write down how to get a free copy of the MTO, I would suggest they just type in their search engine, Friday night medical timeout, and it goes straight to the webpage.
That sounds pretty good. Don't forget. And we'll also have a link on it. When we post this episode, there'll be a link to how to find it real quick and easy. So anybody that downloads can find it pretty fast too, because this is some helpful documentation for any of us clinically.
And it's also on the Corey Stringer Institute website under, I think, Emergency Action Plans, Ashley.
Yes. And I do have to say that this is customizable to your school as well. I got the privilege of working with Daryl Conway out of Michigan University, who helps with the sports medicine program, specifically ice hockey. So I got to customize one for my ice hockey program. And unfortunately, I did have to use it for the first time in 4 years.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to aacitest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown. Okay, I'm calling a timeout right here, and it's not a medical one. You're in Orange County. What are you talking about, ice hockey? What's going on down there?
I have 3 ice hockey teams at my high school, and I work with Cal State Fullerton as well for fun.
Holy moly.
Mm-hmm. This is the first time I've had to see spine stabilize on the ice, so that was a fun feat.
Oh, my goodness. What was your athlete complaining of?
He was tender to palpate midline of the spinous processes with the direct impact to the boards in a flexed position. So we did not move him. So he came up with a T1 compression fracture that finished the job and a lateral shift of L5.
Holy moly. Is he okay now?
He is in recovery. He has not returned. He just started skating, I believe, just light work.
So but, this hey, that's fantastic.
4 weeks ago, I believe. Yeah.
Oh yes. My gosh. Since we had our conference last month, that happened. Holy moly.
Yes.
Well, good job. Way to take care of him.
MTO on ice. So let me ask you a question. I'm going to come back to ask what you and Joel and Victoria do preparation for your games at St. Francis.
Now we're being interviewed, Ashley. What's going on here? He's flipped it.
Yeah. So actually, did you do an 8-person lift or a log roll with EMS when you had that?
I did a single person immobilization until EMS showed up because the fire station's right across the street from the rink.
And how did you get him on a backboard with EMS?
They actually stood him up after I transitioned care.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I don't even know what to say to that.
They palpated. They didn't feel a spinal. What's the word I'm looking for?
Any abnormalities?
Anomaly. Yeah,
we'll go with that. Anomaly there we go. All.
Abnormality is the word I was looking for. Yes. Any spinal abnormality. So they're like, oh, he's fine. Stand him on up. Do you still want to transport? And I was like, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a perfect example. Ashley and I have had discussions before, and EMS is not in attendance, so they're not part of the pregame checklist. So there's not.
Maybe that... they should be. Now we're thinking about it, huh?
So yeah. When you go, are you home or away tonight, Eli?
We are in downtown beautiful La Quinada, California, with a home game. Thank goodness. I love the home games because it's less traffic in LA when you're
beautiful. At home.
Yeah. So during your pregame checklist and getting ready for your C-spine protocol, have you decided whether or not your team, and I assume Joel and Victoria will both be there, are going to remove equipment on the field?
It all depends our course of action on what we believe the injury is. So if we think there's any spinal cord issue or any fracture like Ashley dealt with, we will not remove anything on the field. And we're very fortunate. Our EMS is literally 300 yards away. So once we call, they are there within minutes. We get everything set up, ready to go. We've done enough work over time with our local EMS department that we work pretty well together. They know I'm not going to move the head and I'm going to be waiting for them to come in, and we will take care of everything as soon as we get them on their board. We will remove the helmet at that point and make sure everything's safe. We will remove the pads at that point with them, make sure everything's safe. If we believe there's no potential spinal cord injury. If it is, we usually leave it on, transport them, let them get the scan before they do anything. Now, if we happen to have a rookie that don't know us, well, all bets are off. You know what I mean? But that's usually how it goes, unless it's more of a leg or extremity issue. And then we'll remove the stuff and get them set up and get them ready for transportation.
Well, that's a good answer. You know, the I think the 2017 version of the medical timeout, the Friday medical timeout, on that upper corner question had a check box for equipment removal, and we took it off because there was a lot of controversy in the NATA and the NFL spying committee about whether or not to remove equipment on the field of play. During the pandemic, the issue was finally standardized, and it came a lot with the help of the NFL, Ron Corson again, Jim Ellis, who's the emergency preparedness expert for the NFL, and Dr. Stan Herring up in Seattle. So what we did this year, Ashley, was to put a QR code of their C-spine on-field management video on the back page of the MTO.
Mm-hmm.
A nice education piece, not just for your staff or Eli's staff, but for EMS covering the game or doctors involved in the process. In that video, in addition to the different options on equipment removal in the equipment-laden athlete, it actually has a segment of the video to show how to do it in the emergency department. You can't believe how many emergency departments aren't ready for an equipment-laden athlete. And if that happens, I've seen it in my own emergency room. The athlete is still in the equipment on the backboard 15 minutes after arrival to the trauma bay.
Correct. And I've definitely heard from several EMS professionals stating, remove it from the field because most of us aren't equipped to remove this within the department. So we would prefer someone that's professionally trained in the aspect of equipment removal to do it on site. But then the problem becomes if you're a single AT with no additional help or those qualified to help you remove, then it kind of becomes a problem again.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I'm not a proponent that you got to get the equipment off. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you have to do the multi-person lift that's highlighted on the back of the MTO document, but you have to talk about it before the game. You got to eliminate chaos and confusion. Decide how you're going to handle the C-spine injury prior to the whistle blowing.
So let me ask you this. Where did the name of medical timeout originate from?
Well, that's a good question. I think we can probably give credit back to Ron Corson. His name keeps on coming up. And I think he petitioned to the NCAA in 2012 that a pregame checklist should occur, and he turned it to the medical timeout.
I like it because it really makes it sound athletic but medically professional at the same time, because everybody knows what a timeout is in athletics, except soccer. That's usually when somebody's faking an injury. I could say that. I played it through college. Now, at the same time, you call a timeout, it's bringing everybody's attention to that situation. And that's really what we do as colleagues. We sit down, okay, this is a serious time when we need to make sure we know where the hospitals are, we know where the AEDs are, we know where the vacuum splints are, we know where the closest hospital is, where the trauma... I'm fortunate. I'm not in a rural area. I'm very metropolitan. We've got 3 hospitals within 5 miles, and one of them is a trauma center. So we're pretty set, and we can say, okay, if it's a serious one, he's going to go here. If it's a not so serious one, hey, this is probably where it'll go, and you won't have to stay as late tonight. So that's a good thing. So medical timeout is such a great term. So my hat's off to the gentleman that came up with that name. It just works. So we're going through this medical timeout, Dr. Kyle, and we're sitting there and we're taking care of anybody that I come across the field. So, or hey, let's go to rink. I come across the rink. Hey, Ashley, how you doing? Watch me fall once or twice as I'm trying to walk over to you. And here's what we're doing. We've got our AED right here. We've got our access point right here. Now, those are probably 2 of the most important parts of that medical timeout, understanding how we're going to get EMS in and out, and then where the heck the AED is, because that's literally, as we all know, the difference between life and death. Outside of those 2 points, Dr. Kyle, what do you think is the next most important parts of the MTO? Whether it's Friday night, Thursday night, Wednesday night, whatever. We know the AED is super important and the access point, but what would you say if you're a new athletic trainer and you're putting your EAP together and you're focusing on the MTO, what are the things you really want to hit home?
That's a tough question. I was a professor at Marshall University in their family and practice and sports medicine division, and set up a sports medicine fellowship for family practice doctors to do an extra year or two and be sports medicine physicians and team physicians at the highest level. I'm not sure if you're familiar much with Marshall University, but its mission has always been rural medicine, small town USA medicine.
Which is important. That is so extremely important.
So that if you've ever attended a small town high school Friday night event, it's a huge community event. Everybody's there. Grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles, kids. That's where people gather. You've got this talent on the sidelines and athletic trainers, or maybe an appointed athletic trainer, not certified, unlikely to have a team physician, but the first responders are there. Not just one truck, but 2. And they're not charging to be there.
Because that's what they want to do on Friday night, is watch the game.
Yeah. So who is the most likely individual to have an emergency on Friday night in a small town? Not the player.
The crowd members.
There you go. Who's got crowd response? Have you ever taken care of a cheerleader after a fall with a head injury?
Oh, God, yes. How about you, Ash?
Almost every week.
Who's got cheerleading response? The sideline or EMS? How about
be Victoria at our school? She gets the cheerleaders.
It was me at Damien.
Say band injury. This medical timeout's been utilized in the state of Texas for several years, and the first high school to take advantage of it, Eli, was Allen High School.
Oh yeah, I know that place. They're huge, football, band, everything.
Yeah, Mary Miller was the athletic trainer there. She's now a little bit north of Dallas at Anna High School. She said they had 800 band members.
Now I'm just going to point something out real quick. We only have 620 kids in our school. So that's more band members than we have students at the school. Dang.
I think that's an important part. And part of the next important part is I want Ashley ready to communicate to the on-field, on-the-track EMS crew with their cot already out, all their equipment, and me on the sidelines about what she needs. So those hand signals are pretty important. Yeah. Ash just gave the all call, universal all call sign.
Everybody help. And that was created by you, correct, Dr. Jim?
Well, I participate in that process. There are a lot of other.
And for those of you that don't know it, that is an X over your head using your arms. That means everybody come over here now, ASAP. Stat, we need some help.
I actually did do the all call sign and then quickly the EMS call.
So I think making sure those signs are available and everybody knows what they mean, it changes the very start of the response. I keep on quoting that daggone Ron Corson, but he came up with the emergency action plan. On every slide, he almost puts, calm is contagious. Calm is contagious. If Eli, if you're leading the emergency response, Eli being calm results in everybody else remembering what they're supposed to do in the first place.
I love that. Calm is contagious. So true in those emergency medical situations. That's fantastic.
Absolutely.
So those hand signals are important, as well as deciding who's going to respond to which athlete, band and cheerleader and spectator is a pretty important point.
I know Ashley's got to get a little sooner than all of us, so we want to say thank you to Ashley for being the co-host today and bringing in great insight. As always, a great colleague. Any of you need to be taken care of at the hockey rink, Ashley is your athletic trainer that you want. So thanks, Ash.
Thanks for having me, Eli. And thank you again, Dr. Kyle.
Thank you, Ashley. Keep up the great work.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you.
But that makes sense. You know, you go to a school that has 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 students, you're going to have large activities, no matter what they are. And you need to be ready, whether it's on the field, on the court, or in the classroom, if you're being initiated to care for somebody. So I know I've never thought of having an EAP for a band because we don't have one. But at the same time, we have a robotics team that's very robust. And as a healthcare professional here, I'm going to have to now sit down and create up my EAP for that classroom that they do everything in. So thank you for more work. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, that gets tough. And that's going to transition into something that I hadn't planned to discuss today, but going back to the small town aspect in a rural setting, one of my crews in Wyoming County, West Virginia, a very rural county, came up with the concept of roster medicine. Roster.
Roster, R-O-S-T-E-R, not rooster, roster medicine.
The team roster. Circle the number of the players that have had a concussion in the past year.
Ooh.
Underline the name in green for those who have asthma and use an inhaler. Star with red, any with sickle cell trait. You get the idea?
Yeah, you're getting prepared for the what ifs. I love that. That's a great idea.
So for your robotics team, you might want to do a little survey of their existing medical conditions.
I love that. Yeah. Great, great concept. Great ideas.
Who has diabetes? Do you have a glucometer handy?
Yep. Oh, God. Yeah, we got that.
So the MTO continues to grow and expand.
I love that. And you brought back rural schools. I have a special place in my heart. I went to Humboldt State University, God bless them. It was a great place to go. It's 12 hours north of LA, out in the middle of the beautiful Redwoods. And I was sent, and I've said this a few times, to a high school 90 minutes south, well, in the middle of the Redwood Forest, South Fork High School in Miranda, California. If I remember right, population at that time was 300. We pulled from 40 miles around for South Fork High School to get 320 students. I had a huge, huge growth in my expectation of healthcare. When you're the only healthcare provider in 30 or 40 miles around, your mindset changes real quick. And it's not like I was certified. I was a college student sent to this high school to help take care of, as my daughters put it, when they were little, daddy takes care of owies. So when I was in college taking care of these owies, I was the only person around. The closest hospital, 40 miles away. The closest clinic was only open Tuesdays and Thursdays. That was it. And they had a nurse practitioner and this is going back 30, 35 years, twice a week. And I remember people would come to me for everything. So as a healthcare provider in a rural area, you're being entrusted with the medical, well, medical care of everyone. It could be a family member, an aunt, an uncle on the sideline. They're trusting that you have enough knowledge. So the fact that you're helping out in those rural areas and you're making them better, I tip my hat to you and God bless you, because that is so needed to make sure that they're safe and healthy at any point.
Well, thank you. And we're just wrapping up a video of a medical timeout in a small community that we shot early in October, homecoming. The coach had been there all 30 years. And he actually also went to Concord University, where I went to school, and knew my dad, the coach and athletic director. And we've been doing in services, so on and so forth. But we had not one, not two, we had 8 medical professionals at the MTO.
Oh my goodness, that's phenomenal.
And the video starts out, 3 of which had each been there on the sidelines every Friday night, one for 17 years, one for 10, and one for 20.
That's phenomenal.
Medics. We had physical therapists. We had an ER nurse. Did we have a certified athletic trainer, an Eli? No. Was there a team physician, home or away? No. But we had 8 invested medical professionals who combined had something like 160 years of Friday night exposure, which comes back to a phrase that I like to share. A team of experts is not necessarily an expert team.
Ooh.
That was so an true. Expert team there, Eli, last month at James Monroe High School in rural West Virginia.
I love that. That's true, though. That's true. Just because you're a quote-unquote expert doesn't mean anything some days.
And that's that philosophy by Dr. Alan Sills, the chief medical officer for the NFL. Alan first heard about our Friday night medical timeout in 2017 when he just took over as chief medical officer. And he said, Jim and Barb, we need this at the NFL. We need a pregame checklist. And they came up with a 60-minute meeting. Some of his colleagues said, well, no, we've got doctors there. We've got medics. We've got very experienced athletic trainers. And I think he was thinking that a team of experts is not an expert team unless they're organized to prevent chaos and confusion.
And that's so true, because I can't tell you how many times I've been on a sideline and watched chaos. Not with my medical team, but either in the stands, across the field, across the court. And there's nothing worse, especially in a medical situation, to not have all your T's crossed, your I's dotted, and have everybody on the same page.
Yeah. And that goes back to where we started on your emergency action plan. I imagine that you and Joel and Victoria rehearsed that emergency action plan multiple times a year.
Oh, yes, we do. By law now in California, and it's a great thing, we already did it a few times a year. We have to practice with coaches now before their season starts. So we just finished going through the emergency action plan and going through an emergency procedure process with them for basketball up on the court. Prior to season starting, we did it on football. This upcoming week, we're going to be doing with soccer on the field. I think it's fantastic being able to practice, because, you know, you got to practice skills or you get rusty and you're not as good in the situation. But letting the coaches see what the situation's like and have them feel what it's like, and trying to spine board somebody, lift them, move them, have another person bringing the ambulance in, where to go get the vacuum splints, the spine board, grab the AED. It brings it to a whole new level of understanding of what we as medical professionals are doing to protect them and their kids in that moment of need. So practicing, yes, we do it, but man, it's really been intriguing this year doing it with the coaches.
Well, things are alive and well for high school sports in Los Angeles.
Knock on wood. We hope to keep them that way too.
Good.
And you're not going to believe this, sir, but we're coming up on an hour already.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you're having fun, the time just flies. You know, I don't want to take too much of your day. I know you got a long day ahead, so do I. But I wanted to ask you one question, and this will be our final question for the day, Dr. Kyle. If you could look at a young individual looking to get into the field and thinking about either going as athletic trainer, paramedic, EMT, nurse, or physician, PA, nurse practitioner, whatever it is, but you know, they want to get into sports medicine. What's a little advice you would give them before they start this endeavor?
How old is this person?
Let's say they're just going into college and they're thinking this is the direction they want to go.
They want to be sports medicine professionals.
Yep. They're still trying to figure out what they want to do, but they know it's in the field of sports medicine.
Well, the first thing I would tell them, there's never been a better time to explore the opportunity of providing good healthcare in the sports medicine arena. There's several avenues available, but all of them are expanding in scope. The athletic trainer of 2030 is a whole lot different than the one of 2010.
It's a lot different than when I graduated in 1994, too. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Certainly, it's an area of expertise that's needed and valued. And I philosophically would hope that this freshman in college has had some team sport participation. And as a sense of value for what the lessons learned in team sports are all about. The teamwork, the discipline, the physical toughness, the mental toughness, all in a time where too many of these teens are being given grades every day based on how many likes they have on that damn iPhone. So team sports participation has value, has some risk in it, and that's why we have these emergency action plans. But overall, it's good. It's good medicine to provide top-notch medical care to an athlete in competition. It's a good spot to be a professional and an expert, and it's available.
Couldn't have said it better myself, sir. Thank you so much.
Is that too philosophic for you?
You know what? No, not at all. I think everybody will understand that. That was fantastic. And I really got to say thank you for all you've done for the profession. Thank you for everything you've done to help keep high school students, college students, and as we know, medical timeouts used in the pros, so the professional athlete, keeping them safer, keeping them on the field, keeping them out of the hospital, or if needed, getting them to the hospital a little quicker with your ideas you've come up with over the years. So thank you for everything you do for the profession. Thank you for coming in today and being willing to spend an hour with us talking about medical timeouts and how to take care of all these phenomenal people that want to be in athletics.
You're very welcome. I very, very much appreciate the opportunity to meet with both you and Ashley today. And I'm looking forward to a chance that maybe we can collaborate on a few projects in the future.
Like I've said before, I'm in. Just give me a holler, shoot me a text, phone call, email, whatever. I'm in. Anything to do to help you, because you've been doing great work.
Thanks again, Eli.
You have a great day, sir. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.